This video is the first of a two-part look at whether or not wholesaling is legal. In this video, we're going to cover three things: what wholesaling is, what wholesaling isn't, and is it legal for you without a license? And just so you know, the answer to this just might shock you. So, what is wholesaling? Well, probably the easiest way to explain wholesaling is to start with something that you already know: the well-known strategy of buy low, sell high. This is sometimes called flipping or retailing. And this is buying properties really cheap, fixing them up, and then selling them at full retail value. Now, that's something that we're all familiar with. Well, wholesaling is simply a variation on this. It's basically a strategy of buy low, sell low. See, it's buying those exact same properties cheap, but not fixing them, and instead marking the price up a little and then selling them as is, cheaply, to someone else who will then repair it. So who buys from wholesalers? Well, the two most common wholesale buyers are investors, who usually pay all cash. Now, these can be flippers who want properties to fix up and retail, or landlords who want properties to fix up and rent out. Either way, they're investors. Or general consumers, who will also usually pay all cash. Now, these are owner-occupants who are looking for a house to fix up and then live in. So, which type of wholesale buyer is better? An all-cash investor or an all-cash consumer? Well, let's look at the investor cash buyer first. Investor cash buyers have some upsides. One of them is there's lots more of them. Every city is crawling with people who are looking for properties to buy, fix up, and resell. They also tend to be repeat buyers because this is their business. They do this for income, so they need to do it again and again. They're pretty easy to find because they're members of real estate investment groups, or they run ads looking for properties to buy, or call on ads on properties for sale. So because of these three things, it's pretty easy to build a large database of ready cash buyers. Now, what are the downsides to investor cash buyers? Well, one of them is they need a pretty low price. They need to be all in at about 65% to 75% of the property's value or less. In other words, on a $100,000 house, they need to be all in at $65,000 to $75,000 or less. And by all in, we're talking about their purchase price and their repair costs. So now let's look at the consumer cash buyers. Consumer owner-occupant cash buyers have some downsides. The first is there's a lot fewer of them. There just aren't as many of them running around with trunkloads of cash as there are investors. They only tend to buy once because they're usually looking for a property to fix up and live in. It's more difficult to find them because they don't belong to investment groups. They don't have any particular demographic profile. In fact, they cut across every demographic profile there is. And because of those three things, it's much harder to build a large database of ready cash consumer buyers. Well, what are the upsides? Well, they pay a lot more for the exact same property because they don't need a profit margin. Often, they're willing to be all in for 85% to 95% of property's value. So on that same $100,000 house we looked at a moment ago with investors who needed to be all in at $65,000 to $75,000, a consumer is willing to go in as high as $85,000 to $95,000. Now, did you happen to notice that the upsides and the downsides between those two types of buyers are flipped? The investor buyer upside categories are the consumer buyer downside categories, and vice versa. Where investor buyers are strong, such as in their overall numbers and the ease of marketing to them, consumer buyers are weak, being much fewer in numbers and much harder to identify demographically. And where consumer buyers are strong, such as their willingness to pay far more for a property, investor buyers are weak, needing much lower prices and/or attractive terms. So again, which buyer is better, investor or consumer owner-occupant? Well, the one that's better for you is the one that best fits your preferred agenda. So if you're looking for speediness and quantity of deals, then investor buyers are usually going to be better for you because you can find more of them and they're repeat buyers. If you want to create a scalable and duplicatable business, then investor buyers are usually the way to go because you can find them quickly in any marketplace if you decide you want to expand into a different city. You want to get maximum profit per deal? Well, then consumer owners are usually best because they pay a lot more. You want to work in higher end neighborhoods? Once again, consumer owners can often make a whole lot more sense for you. So why would anyone ever need a wholesaler? Well, reason number one is they don't have time to find the deals. Many of them work full-time jobs, especially the consumer buyers. And investors, well, they're usually busy with their current rehab or managing their rentals. Reason number two, they don't know where to find the deals. It's just not their expertise, and trust me, it takes expertise. Reason number three, they don't like negotiating huge discounts. It's very intimidating. It takes a mix of technique, psychology, and big kahunas, some or all of which most people just don't have. So they'd rather just pay someone to bring them deals. Now let's look at what wholesaling is not. Wholesaling is not making hundreds or thousands of random low offers, just trying to tie up some properties with contracts, especially if you never had the intent or the ability to buy any of them. See, many states are taking the position that this is just a flimsy smokescreen ruse for illegally circumventing licensure requirements. Wholesaling is not selling properties that you have under contract. See, it is illegal almost everywhere to sell a property that you don't own without a real estate license or a legal court appointment. Now, this is not necessarily based on how the laws are written in those states, and it's not necessarily based on how the laws were intended, but rather how the laws are being interpreted by the state regulators in each of those states. Now, we'll explore all of these issues later, but until then, keep in mind that any activity that's classified as illegal is a criminal offense. And that means it's subject to penalties, fines, arrest, and imprisonment. So is wholesaling legal if you don't have a real estate license? And the answer is yes and no. In other words, it depends. It depends on where you live, and it depends on how you're doing it, even though it's legal everywhere. Confused yet? Well, don't worry. It'll all make sense really soon. So stay with me as I back up this freight train and take a quick look at what and who determines the legality of the process. Let's take a look at an example state law. Now, this is from the state of Ohio, where I live and do most of my deals. Ohio statute ORC 4735.01 says that a real estate broker includes any person, partnership, association, limited liability company, limited liability partnership, or corporation, foreign or domestic, who, for another, and for a fee, commission, or other valuable consideration, does any of the following. And then it goes on to list pretty much every possible kind of real estate transaction there is. List, buy, sell, negotiate, offer to buy, offer to sell, rent, lease, exchange, etc. But here is the key phrase within that statute. Who for another? So what does that brief phrase, who for another, mean anyway? Well, it refers to someone acting as a third-party representative in the deal rather than as a first or a second-party principal. Now, what do the terms principal and representative mean? And how do they each figure into the transaction? A first or a second party principal is someone who acted as the actual buyer or seller on the purchase contract. And a third party representative is an outsider who was not the actual buyer or seller, but rather someone who represented the interests of one or both of those principals in the deal, such as a realtor. So, even in that super oversimplified example of who for another, it's pretty easy to see why licensure is so important. Because it puts into place a system that can help assure people who need guidance that their third-party representative, their realtor or their agent, will have a minimum level of training, expertise, and accountability. But as you'll see next, party principals also need the freedom to represent their own best interests whenever they want, without any concerns of government interference. So let's look at the summary of the differences between the agent in that first video and the wholesaler in that second video. How were the agent and the wholesaler different? Well, the agent signed a contract to sell the house for the owner, while the wholesaler signed a contract to buy it from the owner. The agent represented only the seller's best interests, while the wholesaler represented only their own best interests. The agent negotiated for the seller to get the highest possible price, while the wholesaler negotiated against the seller to get the lowest possible price. How else were they different? Well, the agent got paid by the seller, while the wholesaler got paid by the buyer, the end buyer in this case. The agent was a third-party mediator of the transaction, while the wholesaler was a principal member in the transaction. The agent was neither the buyer nor the seller in the deal, while the wholesaler was both a buyer and a seller in the deal. So now let's look at a summary of the similarities between the two. How were the agent and the wholesaler similar? Both got paid when the house sold to an end buyer. The end. Yep, that was pretty much their one and only similarity. So clearly, licensing should never be required, right? Well, fasten your seatbelt because this is where things get interesting. We've looked at some fairly typical state law language. That Ohio statute that we looked at is fairly similar to a lot of statutes around the country. We've discussed the purpose of those laws, and of course the purpose was to protect consumers. We've explored the intent behind those laws, and the intent was to provide a minimum amount of expertise and education and accountability for those third-party agents. We've seen how licensed real estate agents are virtually the complete opposite of wholesalers in both their form and their function. And so through all of this, we've clearly identified why licensure should never be required to wholesale real estate. So now it's time for you to learn why none of this really even matters anyway. I know, crazy, right? So head on over into part 2 of this video module for some really eye-opening stuff.